Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashberry. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1259 features two classic stories in a series about a summer job by Life Rattle writer Mike Fay. Tonight's writer, Mike Fay, was born in London, Ontario in 1980, the youngest of five children. The family moved to Oakville when Mike was just a few months old. He grew up and went to school in Oakville, then moved on to studies in the Communications, Culture, and Information Technology program at the University of Toronto. Last month, I played a couple of Mike's stories about a university student looking for summer employment. The narrator finds work with Brock Landscaping, a shoddy outfit run by the rough, loud, bossy owner with no use for university students. He puts the narrator to work on a team with Jim, a guy in his 40s, and Chris, the boss's wife. Jim and Chris seem to want to do as little work and smoke as many cigarettes as possible. The young narrator soon adapts to the lethargy. In the first installment of Mike's stories, Brock added another member to the team in hopes of increasing their work output, a 16-year-old who started the day with enthusiasm that irritated the rest of the crew and then was found in the afternoon sprawled unconscious across the front seat of the company truck, overdosed on cocaine. Let's listen now as Mike Fay reads the next story in this series, this evening on Life Rattle. And remember, Life Rattle stories may contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive.
Stoker by Mike Fay. It's lunchtime, yelled Jim from the front yard. Fucking A, sighed Chris. She tossed her rake into the topsoil and wiped the sweat from her brow. I yawned. I looked over at Stoker. He was an extra hand Brock hired to revolve around the four different landscaping teams that fell behind in their job schedules. As much as we didn't like a fourth crewmate, we all liked Stoker. He did all the jobs the three of us hated. No one knew Stoker's real name. We called him that because Stoker stoked everything. Man, I'm stoked for Ozfest 2001 this year. Dude, it's payday. I'm stoked to get my check. Stoker didn't seem to mind that we called him Stoker, so Stoker caught on. Stoker wore a baseball cap backwards and stood tall and thin, with big, bushy eyebrows and a long nose. His eyes were slits, like he was about to fall asleep, even when he worked hard on something. He had a large beard and could easily pass for being in his mid-30s. But behind all of that, there was something very youthful and boyish about him. Although I had no doubt Stoker was older than me, I couldn't put a definite age on him. Stoker wouldn't tell me either. The four of us gathered on the front porch, out of the blistering afternoon sun. Jim and Chris lit up their usual cigarettes for lunch. Stoker and I brought something to eat every day. That's a pretty good-looking sandwich you got there, Stoker, Jim said from his wicker chair in the corner of the porch. Stoker looked up. Yeah, man. My girlfriend made it for me. She gets up early to make me lunch every day. Shit, said Jim. That's fucking marriage material. You hang on to that one. Stoker nodded and took another bite of his sandwich. Anyone seen any good movies lately? Jim said. I don't know if you would call it good, but I actually paid money to see some piece of shit movie the other night called Ginger Snaps, I replied. The fuck is that? Asked Chris. Basically, I said, it's this flick about this girl who has her period, then turns into a werewolf and goes around slaughtering people. We laughed. Shit, man. Hollywood's hit rock bottom, said Jim. He dragged on his cigarette and tossed it over the porch into the garden. Dude, said Stoker, shaking his head and staring into his sandwich. You just reminded me. We waited. Stoker swallowed and looked into the street. My girlfriend hasn't had her period for 3 months. Chris and I exchanged wide-eyed glances. Jim burst into laughter. Oh, shit, Stoker, Jim laughed. Way to fucking go. I'd say that's a pretty good sign, Chris added. Is she gonna keep it? Fuck, Chris, I don't know, Stoker said. We don't even know if it's there for sure. We haven't talked about it. She just told me this morning. Don't worry about it, said Jim, throwing his hands behind his head and propping his feet up on the railing. Me and my bitch had our first kid when I was 21. It was no big deal. We're doing fine. Chris, you weren't much older, were you? Nah, I was 19, she said. But we turned out all right. I rolled my eyes. Stoker stared out into the street. It's no big deal, continued Jim. You're old enough, you're working, you're living together. It's fine. You can support it. Don't look so down. You should be happy. Yeah, said Chris, tapping Stoker on his knee and smiling. You should be proud. Stoker stood up, brushing the crumbs off his pants. Fuck this, he said. I ain't hungry. He stuffed the rest of his sandwich into his bag and tossed it on the stairs as he walked down the porch and onto the driveway. The fuck is with him? Chris asked. Ah, he's just scared, shrugged Jim. Jim stretched, sighed, and lit another cigarette. Happens to the best of us at a time like this. Hey, Stoker, Chris called. Can I have your apple? Stoker waved, without turning around. Chris picked up the plastic bag and stuffed her hand in, searching for the apple. All right, that's it, guys. See you here tomorrow, said Chris. Jim, Stoker, and I nodded and walked through the junkyard gate. Hey, Mike, wait up, Stoker called after me. Can I get a ride home? Sure, Stoker, I said. Hop in. We drove in silence during the short trip to his house. Stoker pointed and mumbled a new direction every few seconds. That's it, he said, pointing to a small bungalow at the dead end of a heavily wooded street. Weeds grew high in the front yard, the landscaping and vegetation overgrown. Two cats lazed on the broken walkway stones that led up to a crooked screen door. Stoker shook my hand before getting out of the car. Thanks, Mike. See you here tomorrow, he said through the open window. Stoker walked gently up the pathway. As he approached, the screen door opened quietly, revealing a short, blonde-haired girl. She wore red sweatpants that didn't reach her ankles and a tight, white t-shirt with a faded WWF slogan. She stood with her arms open and they held each other there, tightly, as if Stoker was a soldier who had just returned home. Stoker and the girl turned, smiled, and waved to me as they walked into the house. I smiled and drove home.
That was Stoker, written and read by Mike Fay. Fay's next story is called The Blower Incident. Let's hear that one now.
The Blower Incident by Mike Fay. The third week in May arrived. Sunny, warm days, birds singing, children laughing, playing in their front yards, and I was miserable. At the end of last week, Chris and Jim had decided that we should pull together and show our boss, Brock, what we could accomplish as a team. Our past jobs were marred by routine screw-ups and careless mistakes. But today was different, a fresh beginning. We would start our days early and on time, work together, and do our jobs right the first time. The following Monday morning, at 8:30 a.m., a half hour after we were all supposed to have regrouped and left the shop for the first job, I was the only one present. My mom dropped me off, and I made my way through the front gate into the muddy, deserted junkyard. I sat down on the moist couch under the rusted awning and sulked. Fucking people. Tomorrow, I'm sleeping in. About 5 minutes later, I heard Jim coming up the driveway behind me. He whistled. Hey there, buddy, he said. He wore his now trademark green baseball cap and filthy blue jeans. Yeah, hey, I muttered. Something wrong, dude? He asked as he lit his his first cigarette. Nah. Because if there is, you know you can talk to me. We're buddies and all that, right? Jim always had a sly smirk on his face when he said those things that made me wonder whether he really meant it. Just then, Chris, Brock's wife, emerged from the house. She walked over to us as she adjusted the papers on the clipboard. "What's up for today?" asked Jim, blowing smoke out of his nostrils, then mouth. "We're going back over to that house we left off at Friday near Mineola. We still got a shitload to do, and Brock wants it done by the end of today. He's swinging by this afternoon to make sure it's all getting done right." Jim and I both sighed. The three of us began loading tools and wheelbarrows into the back of the pickup truck. I started the engine. It always needed a good 10 minutes warm-up before we could get it moving. "Is Brock ever going to get this tailgate reattached to the back of the truck? Anyone driving behind us one day is going to get fucking killed," I said. Chris grumbled an inaudible reply. A few minutes later, we headed west on Lakeshore Road through Port Credit. The drive was silent as Jim and Chris gently worked on their cigarettes. I stuck my head out of the window to breathe. "You know, I was thinking last night," said Jim. "We really got to keep this group together, you know? Don't let Brock split us up or any of that shit he does to the other crews. We work real good together. I think we're just starting to hit our stride." I rolled my eyes and kept silent about being the only one on time that morning. Apparently, Chris and Jim had already forgotten about our new hard work resolutions from Friday. We arrived at the house, unloaded the tools from the truck, and worked away at Friday's unfinished tasks. Jim raised the front garden beds and stacked river rock around them. I helped Chris cut out pieces of the lawn in the backyard to put in walkway stones leading into the patio. Despite the nice breeze coming up the street from the lake, the day grew steadily hotter. Jim came back every 20 minutes or so to see how we were doing and smoke another cigarette. By 2 o'clock, we had only completed half of the walkway stones in the backyard, and the river rock for the garden still lay in a large pile on the driveway. Brock would be on his way soon, if he wasn't already. "Man, it's hot," said Jim. He leaned on his rake and dragged on his cigarette. "Yeah, somebody should go down to the store on the corner over there and score some drinks," Chris added. After a pause, I looked up. They were both looking at me. "No way. No fucking way. Not me," I protested. "Why not? Guy, it'll take 2 seconds, and you're the only one who knows how to drive that beat-up piece of shit," Jim said, pointing to the truck. He handed me a $5 bill. I jumped into the truck and took off down the street. I had to get there and back before Brock arrived to check up on us. I parked in the back of the plaza behind the store and hopped out, leaving the keys in the ignition. I ran inside and grabbed 4 drinks, paused to enjoy the air conditioning, paid, and climbed back into the truck. Pulling into the front of the plaza, I realized I faced Here Ontario Street at one of its busiest hours. I looked out my driver's side window and knew I only had a few seconds to make a right-hand turn before the light changed and I was forced to wait for the traffic to pass. Traffic that could also contain Brock. The trick to driving that pickup, a 1972 Chevy, I learned early on. You couldn't ease onto the gas and hope to accelerate. That would just cause the engine to stall and the whole damn thing to shut right off. If you wanted to go anywhere in a decent amount of time, you had to practically put that fucking pedal right down through the bottom of the truck. And that's just what I did. I stomped on the gas like a grade school student trying to explode his empty juice box at recess. Flying into the intersection, I yanked the wheel to the right, almost taking the turn on 2 wheels, and just beat the rest of the traffic as the light changed. I laughed, hitting my right hand on the wheel. Fucking thing still had some life after all. Suddenly, I heard loud car horns behind me. A white Oldsmobile pulled up beside me in the passing lane. An elderly woman screamed at me in some foreign language and pointed back at the intersection. "Jeez, relax," I thought. "I didn't cut it that close." I arrived back at the house. Jim stood on the muddy driveway and watched me as I parked. Hard at work as usual, I snickered, tossing him a drink. 6 minutes and 24 seconds, Jim said. Not bad. He followed me into the backyard. Hey, he continued, I was thinking we should probably clean that driveway, get some of the mud off. Brock told me to do that every so often just to keep things neat. You mind doing that? I handed Chris her drink and nodded. I was sick of cutting in the shapes for the stones. I walked back out to the truck and looked over the top into the bed. I thought. Rakes, shovels, trimmer, sod pieces, garbage. Nope, no blower. I turned around and called back to Jim as he and Chris walked out of the yard. Hey, did you guys put the blower somewhere? No, it was in the truck all morning. It was on top of everything. Well, it's not here now. Dude, it was in the back of the truck when you were going to get the drinks. I saw it as you were driving away, said Jim. My mind raced. I climbed back into the driver's seat and shot back down the street towards the plaza. I ran the yellow light and made another wild turn. Left this time, back onto here, Ontario. I squinted into the sun, down the street into the oncoming traffic lane. Not only for signs of the blower, but for Brock. The traffic moved smoothly. There were no obstructions in either of the lanes, and from what I could see, nothing on the sidewalk in front of the plaza. I swung another left turn into the plaza and immediately retraced my route. Nothing behind the store where I had previously parked. Nothing on the driveway back down to the street. My heart was pounding. Shit, I said to myself. Shit, 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 shit. I stood on the curb and looked as far as I could see, down the street and the sidewalk. Nothing. I drove back to the house. Jim and Chris still stood on the driveway. Their hopeful glances turned fearful when I stepped out of the truck and shrugged my shoulders. I don't believe it, Chris said. I don't fucking believe it. You lost the fucking blower? Relax, Chris. They're not that expensive. What, 150? 200 bucks? I'll work it off. A blower? Try closer to 800, dumbass. Bullshit. She's right, Mike. I priced one at Canadian Tire this past weekend, Jim said. My stomach jolted. I needed to sit down. 800, my voice trailed off. They stood there in silence, looking at me as I slumped onto the grass under a tree. I thought I was going to puke. All right, we can't stand around all day, Jim said after a few minutes of silence. We still have shit to do, and that fat fucker's probably on his way. $800? Look, you and Chris just go back and finish the stones. When he gets here, I'll tell him. Don't worry, I'll smooth it over. I'm good at that shit. Jim sounded naively reassuring. Chris and I knew better. $800? 10 minutes passed until we heard the engine of Brock's truck clunking up the street. It sounded like a death rattle. Just keep working, Chris said. Brock's door slammed shut. Hey, Jimmy, looking good. He walked up the driveway and disappeared around the corner into the front yard. He was in a good mood. About half a minute of silence passed. That was a good sign. I looked and saw Chris, her head cocked upward, straining her ear for a noise. And then we heard it. The angry bellow of a landscaping boss realizing he's out of an $800 piece of equipment. I looked down the path and saw Brock, in his trademark stained white sleeveless t-shirt, belly bouncing with each marching step he took towards me. Talk to me, Mike. Talk to me, you little shit. My mind raced. Okay, well, you see, I just went down to the store to get some drinks, and, I came back, and it was gone. I stared at my fellow crewmates. They stared back. Bullshit. Bullshit, he screamed. Did you notice there was no tailgate on that truck? When there's nothing to block something that's rolling, it keeps going. Okay, it wasn't in the truck when I got back. So I went back to the store to look, and it wasn't there either. I don't know where it is. It was in the back of the truck as he was driving away, Jim said. I saw it. I stared at him, wide-eyed. Gee, Mike, Maybe someone stole it, Brock continued. I don't think so, Brock, I said. I was back looking for it not 2 minutes after it happened. 2 minutes is plenty of time for some asshole to pull over, pop it in his back seat, and take off. I would do it. I squinted at Brock and swallowed. I couldn't say anything more. The rest of the afternoon we worked in silence. It took one more hour to finish the rest of the jobs and pack everything back into the two trucks. The three of us piled into our truck and followed Brock back to the shop. I drove. We inched along through downtown Port Credit. The sun beat through my driver's side window. The mixture of Chris and Jim's smoke and the thought of me having to pay Brock back a full 2 weeks' wages turned my stomach. Thanks for the help back there, eh, guys? I said. Boy, we don't sell each other out in this crew. No way, man. We stand together. Yeah, blow it out your ass, said Jim. Chris snickered. Jim snickered, too. Then they exploded into full hysterical laughter. Bastards, I thought. I shook my head and drove the rest of the way in silence. We parked the truck and unloaded the equipment back into the junkyard. When we finished, we saw the pink sheet for tomorrow's jobs taped on the front door. Jim and I read it as Chris went inside. It was the usual work for him, but tonight there was something a bit different. Crew number one was still cutting grass. Crew number two was still rolling sod. But crew number three was now comprised of only Jim and Chris, and they would be helping group number four until further notice. I looked at Jim. He had that smirk on his face again.
That was Mike Fay reading his story, The Blower Incident. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1259. Arnie Ackman recorded Mike Fay reading his stories. My name is Virginia Ashbury. Life Rattle returns next Thursday with more stories. And Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.